us for more insults that are also life hacks.
Yeah, so I see it as habitual nervousness, you know, like everything just makes you nervous, you know, and or certain, you know, certain social settings set you off and make you very nervous. And so what
people who've been in a relationship with a narcissist have the same trauma as people who've been to war.
Whew.
But anxiety is all in the, is all made up. It's all made up. And then not, and definitely not to conflate it with any fear of death, right? We say, bitch, did I say I'm ugly?
Right.
Are we gonna, are we?
Let's say, you shouldn't have gotten a divorce. It's kind of like, well, that's not in the cards, right? They've just become, you know, obsessed with other people's lives and what they don't have. But they're not working toward that either. They have built no plan for that. So they're not saying, you know, it'd be different. If I saw somebody online, I'm like, you know what? I like that. I kind of want, I'm going to try that, you know, or I want to do something like that.
Well,
you know?
But it's the thing. This is producer mindset.
Right.
Hello, everyone. A little reminder, this is hashtag team no delusion. Nothing is edited. Nothing is polished up. Everything is raw. Everything is straight imported onto the podcast because I don't want to participate in none of that Hollywood nonsense. Everything has to look perfectly. Everything has to look fake. Everything has to look a certain way. So you'll get the raw version. A little before we go into the episode, I've been having and receiving lots of requests on information like what are my offerings right now, what's happening, what will be happening. And as I am currently kind of in a, aside from being in a rebranding, I'm trying to figure out and level up my own methods right now. So there will be another Dollar Academy, which is the money course, 6 months. I'm currently practicing and working and refining methods for a discipline room, how to become a luck magnet. I have redneck magic coming up. I have rural life. I have Louboutin riches. I have everything. Everything is coming up. Be sure to be subscribed to my email list on dollaracademy.com. And if you can't find it or if it's too much effort, just hit me with a DM and just give me your name and email and I'll put you there on manually myself. I have lots of good stuff coming from tiny luck exponential magnet amplifications for like $9 to several thousand dollar programs. So I promise you, I'm trying to cater to as broad as possible and I'm trying to get everyone involved. So yeah, get involved and I can't wait to see you in.
And prettier 1 week.
Everyone, welcome back at Fearless Wealth. It's your opinionated favorite, legendary Amerislav, and it's my, well, we're keeping the short intro now, and my favorite diamond here at Diamonds and Demons. Follow us for more insults that are also life hacks.
They double, that's right, because we like to have multi-purpose things. Get the best value out of it.
Duality, baby, duality.
Yes.
Did you have anything that you want to specific talk about today?
No, actually, I think that I liked the topic that we were discussing earlier on social. So.
Right. So for the readers, I made a post saying that anxiety is inflated self-importance. I got a bunch of DMs. I got a bunch of, you have no idea what the fuck you're talking about. I am privileged. Again, I'm always very privileged.
Damn, that's so good. That's so life affirming.
Absolutely.
Like, thank you.
Thank you. I agree. I am indeed
the luckiest. I'm flexing that privilege hard. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Me and privilege make out all the time. That's why the fuck I came to America, motherfuckers, for privilege.
Get a room. God.
So present your statement or your argument.
Well, I was, you know, I think part of it, you know, I did clarify later, you know, that and qualify the statement a little bit more was that I said initially that, you know, it's more like just undisciplined excitement, you know, that's kind of how I see it, is that, you know, there's a certain amount of, there's a lack of discipline involved in it that, you know, where there's a part of you that's just very feral, right? And I think the person I ended up engaging on this almost corroborated this, right? Where it becomes this fight or flight thing, and we all just get, we all tap into our primal, you know, fears and whatever. But, you know, I said you could easily switch out excitement for anxiety and probably have a whole paradigm shift on how you see the world. And, you know, and the, you know, and of course she chimed, you know, somebody had chimed in and said, you know, oh, so somebody can be excited about death in the same way that they have anxiety about death. And for me, I have a hard time understanding anxiety towards death or anything inevitable. That's like saying I'm, you know, I'm anxious about growing as you're growing, like it's already happening. You're in it. You know, if it's something that's inevitable, to being anxious about it is a weird thing to me that it's hard for me to actually just wrap my head around, you know? And as I was kind of typing that out, I felt like, you know, there is a point where you cross the line of delusion, right? Like you've become untethered from reality, that you've built these hypothetical situations and you're now living in like a sort of alter universe of hypotheticals in your head, where there are certain, you've projected these types of things upon an actual reality, and you put this new facade on it, and it's become that for you because, you know, and you've almost talked yourself into it. You cross over from just, you know, you there's like a spectrum of normal human emotion, slightly disordered, to like, you know, almost schizoaffective disorder, right? Like you're literally living in a delusion now. Like this is not even real anymore. Like there's nothing tethering you to reality. So, and all of which creates a sort of either fear or nervousness in you. And I kind of saw anxiety as a sort of extreme, or habitual, I should say, habitual nervousness, right? The way I see depression as habitual sadness. So like that's just how I see it. I'm not saying that that's clinically correct.
Sure.
I'm just saying.
First of all, yes to fucking.
But for this conversation, my word is divine. So anyway, but yeah, so I see it as habitual nervousness, you know, like everything just makes you nervous, you know, and, or certain social settings set you off and make you very nervous. And so when I said you could switch out excitement, by and large, that's true. Now, somebody else had, you know, this woman or person had chimed in and said, well, no, and she started to conflate it more with fear as opposed to nervousness, which to me are very different feelings. Like, I can be nervous about something, you know, but to be fearful means that, you know, I actually think I'm in peril, right? Nervousness is just jitters, whereas like fear is peril. Like I'm actually starting to tap into something far more primal, you know, of like, there's an existential threat here, right? And that's not, I mean, and I think that's a line that gets crossed. She's saying that it's a spectrum of all of these feelings and anything can set it off. And to me, it's just like, well, then it does. It's gone from meaning a particular thing to meaning nothing at all. You know,
right.
It's kind of just a catchphrase for all the things.
Which is my problem.
Right.
So I don't know if you've read the other comments, but people pull out PTSD and trauma. And I'm like, y'all doing the stretch. Y'all doing the stretch.
Yeah,
You should know better than to speak to me this way.
I thought I trained better, but okay.
But yeah, because now we're saying, well, current modern psychology and psychiatry says that the absence of things is just as traumatic as the bad, air quote, things that
and I'm
using the example, you know, I wanted to do cheerleading, my mom never, you know, my mom didn't support me, therefore that was traumatic for me, right? So the lack of support, and I'm like, y'all fucking disgusting motherfuckers, how dare you even put how dare you insinuate that trauma is such a big spectrum that you put rape and war victims in the same boat and verbiage as you who didn't get support from your mom for fucking cheerleading? How dare you? How absolutely filthy.
Your brain is processing it in the same way, right? Is its own distortion. The mere fact that they're distorting and kind of distorting the bandwidth of such a word to include themselves in it is unto itself. Like,
it's mental illness.
It is. But like you said, right, that is a sort of self-importance where it's like, I should be regard, my situation should be regarded in the same way as you know, as a war, as somebody who witnessed, you know, war crimes. And it's just like,
and
really? Yeah. Like, and that's how your brain is doing it?
Right. There's now scientific, and I'm using this with a wink, with a fucking disgust, with a vomit emoji, pull up a vomit emoji. Can we pull up a vomit emoji? No, apparently not. So the latest evolvement of that, and I still want to jump into my own definitions of these words, but the latest evolvement of that is that people who've been in a relationship with a narcissist have the same trauma as people who've been to war.
Ooh. Okay. I mean, you have to condition your brain to see it that way. Like, you do. It is conditioned.
You have to, of course.
You have to,
of course.
You have to, you would have to convince yourself. It's a whole sales pitch that you've given yourself and bought in, right? And part of me is like, and that's one of the reasons why I told that person on your thread, look, perspective can, you know, skewed perspective can be course corrected. Like, you can course correct on that. You can start to look at things differently, and you need exercises that force you to do that, right? So in the same way, like when people try to quit any other addiction, right? You're just addicted to a certain feeling and a certain emotion, an emotional response. But when you're trying to break addiction, typically what they have you do is they have you do something else. Like, what you would have filled the time with, or the activity in that moment, you would have grabbed a cigarette, or you would have grabbed, you know, some weed, or you would have alcohol, or whatever it is that you're dependent on. Now you're going to do something else. So you're just going to replace it. Now, I'm not saying that's the best way. But
no, but there's a hierarchy. There's a hierarchy, right? I'd rather have you religious than being on heroin. Like, I don't care. Like,
right. I'd rather. It's fine. Then you're addicted to walking. Nothing happens to you. Like, there's no adverse consequence to you. You know, saying every time I was going to grab a cigarette, I went and walked instead.
Exactly.
So now you're fucking fit. Okay, if that's the biggest thing that happens to you.
Exactly. No, that's important.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, then at least the consequences of those habits are good, right? So, and the idea is that you do that. For some reason, you picked up a habit that got you to a place of being unhealthy. You need new habits that get you into a place that is healthy. And part of those habits can be to start seeing if you could, in fact, could you actually perform the litmus test that says, could I replace I'm anxious with I'm excited? And I think you could in certain cases, such as public speaking, going on a flight and a trip, going to a public function where there's a lot of people, you know, things that normally get people worked up, you know, taking some social initiative, things like that, where it's like, I need to put myself in a position where I do risk rejection, or, you know, somebody being rude, or somebody, you know, or any number of social retaliation. I have to put myself in that position, and I have to start building a resilience to it so that I'm not so terrified of it, so that I'm not, you know, I have to build up that resilience. Yeah. And most parents let your kids do that for that reason, right?
Right. And which is what ironically, because you mentioned addiction previously, if you go to any proper therapy, and I'm not talking about one that's sponsored by, you know, modern West medicine, often they not only have you, or, you know, they're seeking with you to exchange the behaviors. They're also expanding, or you're on your ability to hold discomfort.
Yes. Exactly. That you would have to sit with that for a bit.
Right. You have to learn, because that's a skill. And we're robbing people from that, right? We talked about this endlessly when we do ribbons participation, because that's the first time when you're like properly sharing, like, okay, oh, disappointment, and not right. Like those are the first safest way. I wanted to cycle back to my own definition of the words, though. I think. Anxiety is all made up. I don't even think it's living in the head and living in Delulu and fantasy land. Excitement, whereas one can be nervous, for example, but nervousness would, and I understand for a lot of people, they might sound close to each other, but they're not. Nervousness, anticipating to an event that's actually happening, right? I'm nervous because I have to perform. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think those nervousness and excitement can be close together, but anxiety is all made up. And definitely not to conflate it with any fear of death. right?
Here, yeah.
And then, because that was a example specifically used, I think people are afraid of death for various psychological reasons, because, you know, regret, shame, whatever, you know, guilt, right. They, right? They haven't right. done something.
Yeah.
And the fear of how they're dying.
That's right. That's, and that's what I called out, right? It's just like,
right.
is it actual fear of death itself? Because nothing happens there, right? That's the
Nor do you know. Like, you cannot.
Right. You don't that, know. Like, there's no.
So then it would be anxiety because it's made up. Again, you have no idea what death
right.
itself is going to be like. So you cannot be anxious about it.
But I could certainly understand somebody being fearful of, you know, of perhaps they know that their parents both had cancer and they could genetically predispose to that. And so they might be fearful of that. And then they saw the suffering and they're fearful of the suffering. All of that makes sense to me. That
and
I
that's
guess,
fearful, right?
But that's fearful. And it's not necessarily of death. It's of pain, right? Right?
Absolutely.
The suffering and the medical bills or whatever the fuck else that comes with that baggage. Right?
Just suffering. Just
right.
pain and suffering.
In
yeah.
general. But that's not, I mean, but to me, that's not anxiety. That's not how anxiety is being used. And I feel like when you start to, what I don't like is when people, there's two things I don't like about the way in which anxiety is kind of couched in society. The first is that it's, what they do is they use a very reasonable scenario and that, you know, of something like fear of suffering, which is reasonable. That's a reasonable thing to fear, especially if, you know, you have a genetic predisposition or you are captured, let's say, and you know that this person is not going to treat you well. All of those things are, that's a reasonable feeling, as opposed to anxiety, which is a condition where in the disorder is in the fact that you're having an unreasonable response to an otherwise very benign situation, right? That is the disorder. That's
right.
That is the disorder. There's nothing disorderly about being fearful of a fearful situation. Like being afraid in the middle of a war zone is normal. If you didn't, I would think there was something wrong. Right.
Right. Then we'll have
That comports. That those two things line up. But when you're sitting there saying I'm anxious about asking for more ketchup, there's nothing in that situation that suggests that should be a thing. Like that is a very benign.
Unless we're in America, then it's violent and it's your truth.
It's violence, right? Right, and it's like, but to me, that's you're crossing over into some sort of delusion now, where it's like you're more than just nervous. You're more than just nervous. You've got an irrational fear of something. And the second thing that I don't like is the idea of treating disorder in the possessive and taking some sort of ownership of it as if it was
pet partner,
right? That it was some sort of immutable characteristic, no different than your height, right?
Oh,
I can't get rid of it. Yes, you fucking can. Like that is not you.
It's like you gained it,
right? You gained it. You can lose it. Like it's a you know it's more like
it's just like weight. Yeah,
you can lose it. You know, and you can and just like muscle, you can build it up. There's all sorts of things you can do to augment this situation. But when people talk about it in the possessive, that was what I was joking about, where I'm like, sorry, I can't go. I got to go take my fucking anxiety for a walk because it's now this companion of mine that I have to consult every time I want to do anything. Like you're almost a hostage of your own personality disorder, you know, like it's weird.
Well, so I made the reel on TikTok I made the reel on Instagram and I cross post on TikTok. I'm not on TikTok. Like I don't use the app. I just post and like I'm out. So I like fucking a week later, I learned that my video has been removed because of violent speech. And the video was me saying, if you tell me you can do something because, oh, you know, my anxiety won't allow me or my depression won't allow me, coming back to, you know, quotes that we always talk about, I'm like, you need to break up because it sounds like you're in an abusive relationship. And that got removed for violent speech. And I think, and I'm not sure if this is a personality trait or if it's because, you know, I speak so many languages. So one starts to think about the meaning of languages and words. My problem is even the word, I feel like we're missing a component or a word that should come before fear. And I'm going to elaborate on why that is, because this is the thing. There's no way, for one, actual fear does not communicate, that does not market itself. Like, it doesn't sell itself, right? It doesn't have these elaborate stories and scenarios. That's all mental. That's not fear. Fear is very innate. Like, and, you know, you're in an alley, something tells you, like, it doesn't go like, oh, but maybe, right? when I had my recent rattlesnake encounter, there's nothing in my mind going like, oh, you know, maybe the rattlesnake doesn't like me. Do I feel like running? Do I feel like stepping aside? Yeah. The actual fear innately takes over and there's no conversation. Problem, that's also why I have a problem when people say they fear, let's say, school shooters. So the parents nowadays, and I'm going to be so fucking hated for this. When parents tell me, you don't know what it's like to have a kid in the school system because I'm afraid daily that I'm going to get a call. I'm like, no, the fuck you're not afraid. Right. This is the thing, because real fear requires you to act.
Right.
Because exactly. Real fear. There's a reason why you don't throw your unswimming child in a swimming pool, because there's a real fear that your kid is going to drown. Right. So you're not going to do that. There's when you learn that, you know, Uncle Hank, who is a child, and you learn that he's a child molester and who's out on probation now after, you know, serving 10 years. You're not going to put your kid to play with Uncle Hank because there's a real fear. Right. So fear is directly linked to an activity in the now. So when people say, you know, I'm afraid of, you know, getting cancer because, you know, I'm afraid of getting diabetes, but they're shoving sugar down their fucking face. You're not afraid.
No, you're not.
So you're telling yourself to feel good about yourself, or to kind of like delulu yourself into, okay, you know, I'm aware. Like, I don't know what kind of mental gymnastics you're doing, but you're not afraid.
I think, you know, I go back to, and because you speak Spanish, I can say this and it'll make sense. There's a difference between estar and ser, right?
100%. Yeah.
And the difference is estar is temporary and ser is permanent, right?
Yeah.
So soy, mujer, right?
Mm-hmm.
But let's see. So I can say soy mujer, but I can say estoy enferma, right?
Right.
Because I'm temporarily sick, but I'm always a woman.
Which ironically also wouldn't work with the new like rules in America, right? Because you cannot always. That's also temporary. But that's just a little wink.
But there's a link. There's linguistic markers and evidence of this, that people recognize the difference between permanent and impermanent and situational. And so because we know innately that that exists, you know, as humans, I think what we're doing is we're kind of hiding that. And we're kind of just saying it can stay as long as it wants. It could be permanent. It could be part. And then we start saying, well, maybe I'm now going to say, so now it sounds really weird, but I can say this. Yo soy enferma, which is like.
And now it's permanent.
That's right. Whereas I know my Spanish teacher would have fucking thrown paper clips at me for doing that. Today, not so much, right? Like, I'm only saying this because it's such a stark example. But the thing is that's what we're doing, is that we're changing the meaning in that way and how we're using
again.
It. And in English, we don't have the distinction. So we can do that. We can just say, well, we don't know that it's temporary. We don't know that it's permanent. We don't know. Yes, we do. Yes, we do. There's plenty of precedent. There's plenty of, you know, there's plenty of situations where we know the difference and we've acknowledged it as human beings. And you're being disingenuous, you know, and what you're trying to do is then take your identity of sickness and you're saying, okay,
making it permanent.
And you've chosen for it to live there as a permanent fixture.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you've grown around it now and there's no extracting it because you don't want to differentiate yourself from your own mental issues. And I mean, I'd sooner listen to an argument that says that these sicknesses aren't real, right? I'd sooner listen to that than I would listen to somebody try to rationalize it to me.
Well, this is the problem with Top G. I hate but the fact that I've been referring to him in the last three podcasts, he's very clear. And I will, and I have adopted his phrasing in that because I share that opinion. Like, why would I want you? Like, people are trying to convince him of how real depression is. And I'm like, why would I want to believe you? You're like, why are you trying to convince me of its realness?
Yeah.
And people make, right? Obviously, it is to validate their own, you know, inaction or, you know, misery or sadness, whatever the fuck it is. Yeah. But people are so, so bent on making you believe how real it is. And I'm like, y'all should believe. If y'all had the 1/10 of dedication in convincing me of like how real depression is into like how real success is or determination, y'all be fucking winners. Y'all be all be multimillionaire. Because that's the same vague concept, consistency, discipline, motivation, inspiration, all these terms, right? That for one don't exist in my language. Like these words do not exist in my language because it describes this abstract, like, you know, like I'm considering and I have feelings and I have choice about this thing. Yeah. If you, and it's the same for willpower. Willpower is this, like, how is it that none of these things are measurable, right? We measure them in perhaps behavior and externally, but they're not measurable, which is funny because even I, like when people say, I want more willpower, I'm like, but how do, like, you want more of something that already doesn't exist?
Right.
And now you're trying to.
Yeah.
Right.
You want discipline in your life. That you can measure. Right.
There we go. Right? Because there's the time when I didn't do the thing or I did the thing and I didn't feel like it.
You didn't do a thing. That's exactly it. Like it either happened or.
And I repeated that.
You showed up or you didn't. Yeah, exactly.
Consistency.
Yeah. That is measurable.
So convince me of the realness of discipline and the same level you're trying to convince me of your fucking depression.
Right. And, you know, what it is that, you know, and that's one of the reasons why I see depression and anxiety a lot like just an addiction, you know, they're addicted to a feeling. And it's like, so you went from sad being a totally normal human emotion, right, to habitually and, you know, almost being addicted to the feeling of sadness to the point where you see everything through that. And the thing is, you convinced yourself of this. You sold yourself on this. It was not, you know, and they're like, well, you know, there was a traumatic event, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, right, okay, that's fine. But at some point, there has to be some conversation because, you know, like, for example, that the example of what the woman was talking about where she's like, well, you know, it's like hearing a car alarm go off. You don't know what's triggered it, but it's going off and that's what anxiety is. And I'm like, okay. But at some point, you go out and assess the situation. And when you realize it was just the neighbor's cat jumping on the hood, you click the button and you walk back inside and go back to your business. You're able
exactly
to discern the difference between benign
regulate.
Yeah. But you should
be and that.
Yeah.
Right. And I would, and there's a fallacy in that person. I haven't read that one yet. There's a fallacy in that person's argument because anxiety, again, coming from definitely my own vocabulary, is based on made up trigger, right? There's no real trigger. You're making up. There's no car alarm actually going off. You're pretending as if there's a car alarm going off, and then you refuse to assess the situation to see why a potential hypothetical car alarm could go off.
Right, and it keeps getting
because the normal thing, right? Exactly, the normal thing is your situation
is delusion. You immediately there's the only way you can make your case about this is ultimately by saying the person is delusional. I said there's a point where you cross over from, you know, a reasonable fear or perhaps a slightly unreasonable, unpopular fear to delusion. You've completely reconstructed reality predicated entirely on hypothetical scenarios, all stemming from an event that took place years in the past. I mean, you're really reconstructing.
You're working hard at it. You're working
very hard at it. And the fact that it comes so easily to you now means that you've been doing this for a while, you know, and it's like, to me, and you know, and the idea that she broadened the bandwidth to the point where it was like everything from butterflies in your stomach all the way to paralyzing fear. And I'm like, so there's no room for like what we would call phobias, right? Like agoraphobia.
Which is an extreme.
Right. Right. These disorders that literally are work stoppage, like they can't leave the house. They're paralyzed. Like that's how bad it is. Right. So that is in the same grouping as having butterflies in your stomach. Like it can't be. It can't be like that. That's not the same thing. You know, you're going too far too hard. And to make your point about anxiety. And it's like, I get it. Your job relies on it. And she, you know, she was like, well, if everybody could just replace, you know, excitement for anxiety, then my job would be very easy. And I said, I don't think so. I said, because the reality is that a very simple solution is, can still be very difficult in execution. I said,
sure.
If I point at the mountain and I say the easiest way is straight up, that was a very simple solution, right?
Right.
Go try and do that. That's hard. The execution right. of my solution is very hard because right. you have to go like this back and forth or you're going to have to start rappelling. But you're sure. either way, it's fucking hard. Like, so yes, the solution itself, when I say it, sounds very simple, not complicated, but difficulty is high, right? So because what do you have to do? You have to break a habit. It takes weeks to build a habit. Weeks. And that's if you're diligent about it and you're doing right. the work.
Not if you're passive.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. You're not going to passively change what it is that you that got you here.
So my and I cycling back to depression. So you said like a habitual sadness, and my definition would be a little different. And I want to bring a caveat to that. So mine would be a habitual apathy because sadness is still a deeper feeling again in my translation of the word and also by that using you know my personal definition most people are not depressed nor even are they sad because most people who do depression because I don't have any they're actively doing it. They're still watching, you know, binge watching Netflix or they're doing these high dopamine shit, right? Or eating bad fucking shit. So it's not that you're apathetic, but because apathy would insinuate that nothing works. And that's why actual depression is in such a minority that it shouldn't even be in the scope of the cultural, you know, verbiage. Like it should not. And I think it could even apply for, you know, habitual sadness. Like, and I'm kind of seeing like a mopey Eeyore from like Winnie the Pooh or something that. And I'm like, well, often they're still doing the high dopamine shit, right? Because they don't feel like the other stuff. So I, per definition, depression almost doesn't exist here.
And I promise we will jump right back into the conversation and the episode. But in the meantime, I would like you to hit the like, hit the subscribe, hit the share, and mostly get involved on my socials, get involved on my Instagram, get involved in the conversation on Facebook, get on my email list. You know how much I have been, let's say it, ostracized and removed from certain spaces. So if my Facebook one day disappears, you won't know where to find me. So get on my email list on thedollaracademy.com. Thank you so much. Meanwhile, snap a little picture of it, do a screenshot, share it on your Instagram, tag me. I will absolutely reshare. And any feedback and everything is possible is very welcome too. Thank you so much. Now let's go back to the episode.
Yeah, it's I definitely am skeptical when I hear, in large part because we've over-pathologized everything, right?
Sure.
I mean, everything's a condition now and everything falls under the umbrella because we've completely destroyed the elasticity of the bandwidth of these words. They don't mean anything anymore, like I said, right? So, I mean, I think when people get really defensive about it, to me, that's like you hit a nerve. Right? Thou dost protest too much. Look, the person who's sure of what they think or believe or see is rather impervious to other people's criticism. Like, you'll see people who are like, for example, like you or I, if somebody were to get all, you know, were to get all shitty with us about our position on vaccines, right? We'd just be like, okay, then, you know, it's whatever. And they could judge, they could say whatever they wanted. And we'd just be like, okay, that's what you think. You haven't changed my mind, you know, because we're so sure of our position that, and we're so
integrity.
Secure in that, that it doesn't
integrity.
Matter.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter.
And also, yeah. And other, and coming back to the phrase, other people's validation, approval, or understanding is not required.
Right.
When you live in integrity, it's not required. I don't care if you understand. I don't, if you approve, I don't anything.
Yeah. But I mean, you've been fairly open about the things that you struggle with, like your own personal, like mental struggles, you know, and you've been fairly transparent with that. And all you do is share, hey, this is my thought process. I've been doing this. I'm starting to do this. And then this is what happened, you know, and it's almost like a case study, right? Like, this is what happened. But it doesn't matter that people agree or disagree, because this has already happened to you. So you're just saying, hey, this is a chronicling of my own experience, whatever that means or doesn't mean, right? And when you start to come for people who, you know, when you come for like these disorders, right, or this general mental health shit, people get very defensive about it. And I have to ask, why do you need me to believe this? Like, why do you need me to go along? And then what ultimately happens is, well, you lack empathy, you lack compassion. And I'm like, well, it's hard for me to be empathetic about something I've never experienced, to be fair. It's like, all I can say, you know, I mean, if you told me some cultural, you know, niche thing that happens in Czechoslovakia, I'd just take your word for it. I wouldn't know how to process that. Like, I wouldn't, okay, you know, I guess. Is that good or bad? I wouldn't even know how to qualify it, you know,
right,
but it would,
right.
But you could tell me about it and I just have to take your word for it. Right. And that's kind of how it is with these types, where I'm like, okay, you say you have this, you say that, you know, and I can understand mental blocks. I can understand, there's a lot of things I can understand, right? I can understand a mental block. I can understand, like, you know, having a certain amount of paralyzing fear about particular things and having that kind of blazed on your brain. I can understand. And that ultimately goes back to a mental block, right? Because it's not normal that nobody else is born with that, but you. That doesn't make sense, right? So it's not innately human. It's just something that's there that could possibly be shed. So for me, I'm just like, either we all have it as humans, right? Or you uniquely have it. And if you uniquely have it, then that could be fixed, right? There's an accommodation. There's something to be tinkered with there. Or
yeah.
We can just say it's an abnormality, right? Because that's not the norm. What I don't want to do is say, this is totally normal. Everybody's just a basket case.
Normalize everything.
I won't. Like that I won't do, right? I have no problem calling something abnormal. I don't, that doesn't give me the right to just be a dick, but you know, I can still call it abnormal. Like having
so there, yeah, and this is only present in it used to be only America, but it's the modern West right now, where people have attributed meaning to certain words and certain morality to words that isn't there, mm-hmm. right? And I make constantly the statements along the line, anxious people are weak people, and and the floodgates open, and blah blah blah, and I'm like, well, no, I don't. I'm not saying they don't deserve respect. I don't deserve, like, I'm just saying they're weak people. Denying that there's a hierarchy of weak and strength and
that's
weakness
right.
is
right.
living in la la land.
Right.
We're again,
not, we're
and,
not equal.
And the exact 100% for one. And also, I don't understand. And keeping it personal, like, fatness is a huge example in my personal life, right? Because I will often use the descriptor, I have a fat ass, me and my fat ass. And Americans get so uncomfortable, right? They'll jump into my defense. So I'm making these phrases and they'll go like, oh no, but you're so beautiful. Oh my God, but you're so, but you're still sexy. And oh my, and you know, hips don't lie. And I'm like, and I will literally say, bitch, did I say I'm ugly?
Right.
Are we seriously going to look at my body and ignore that I have a fucking fat ass?
Yeah, we're all just going to pretend together right now. But...
What? What? Right. But if I say I have short arms, because I do,
right?
No one bats an eye.
Right.
But I'm going to sit here and say I have a fat ass and now like the fucking flood. No, I do. I'm not. It's just a descriptor. And the thing is with the weakness thing, right? Not having to live in la la land where you're always where basically you're perfect, because you know weakness. No, that because that would insinuate something. If
right.
you accept, yes, I am weak, But on the other hand, if you break a leg and you've been in like one of the, what is it called? The casket or when you.
A cast?
When oh, a cast. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. So the muscle is weak. You know what you do? You work.
Yeah.
You walk and you make it stronger.
That's right. That's it.
Like, I'm not saying the leg needs to be amputated and oh my God, let's just.
Shaming. Yeah. It really does. It escalates really quickly now where it's like, you can't describe anything. You can't acknowledge that something needs improvement. Like, or that it's not at its best, or that there is better. Like, anytime you acknowledge that there is this, like you say, this hierarchy, right? Then, and it's like, I've told people, I'm like, look, just because you have these things, these attributes, whatever they are, doesn't mean that I think you deserve to die. Like, I'm not calling for a Holocaust. That's not what's happening.
But do you Japanese Nazi?
When I'm not busy being imperialistic.
Right.
I'm actually quite empathetic and benevolent. But like, you know, and that's the thing though. It's just like, and I tell them, like, look, you clearly feel shame about it. And you realize that it does make that you yourself understand that there's an inferiority to this, right? Mm. You get it because you wouldn't be so fucking defensive if you didn't, because you're already reading into this and thinking that I have, you know, that I'm so perfect and I'm so this and I'm so that. I don't have the issues that you have, right? And because I don't, all I'm saying is I realize I'm not in the back of the pack. I might not be at the front of the pack, but your existence indicates to me that I am certainly not at the back. So if you're thinking,
thank you.
So, I mean, it is somewhat affirming to me.
Oh, 100%.
If you don't like the idea of you being at the back of the pack, what you can't do is try to reason your way into thinking, or weasel your way into thinking, that we're the same. We're not the same, right? I might not think that you deserve to die. That doesn't mean that you won't sooner than me. That just means, you know, it just means that if you have that kind of prey mentality, if there is something about you that gives off the signal to predators that you are prey, you're going to get picked off. Like, that's just going to happen. Like, we're pretending that we're not animals. You know, because we're so intellectualized, we thought our way out of it. We've overthought our way out of it. But the reality is that we are still animals, and we are still pack animals, and we are our own predators. And we make this clear every day. And I tell people, look, you can't simultaneously tell me that you've got these disorders, right? And I'm telling you I've got none of that, and I don't even understand it. And somehow we're still equal. The fuck we are. We're not. You just explained to me how fucking broken you are.
Well, and, but this is the thing, right? These people will use their disorder in hindsight as an advantage. Oh, I got so rich. Or, you know, Elon Musk is so rich because he's autistic and he has ADHD. Mm. So then, then it's convenient for you, right? Right. Yeah. So, no. Yeah. It's such mental gymnastics. And the removal of from nature, you made such a good point, is that just because we have a, you know, perhaps a spirit, a soul, a sense of morality to various degrees and hierarchy too, right? Yep. It's like, oh, we're not from nature. No, everything is constantly trying to kill us.
Right.
Our own body is trying to kill us.
From the day we're born. You're trying to die.
There is war. Constantly, yes, right? Yes. Whether it's you trying to avoid being hit by a car, and you're not walking around there like you're fucking in actual war zone. It's a part of your existence. You look left, you look right, you look left again, you cross the road. Because if you don't, the car is going to fucking kill you.
Right.
You're not going to be able to cross the road.
Right.
So, but yeah, but it shouldn't be. It shouldn't have, right? It's always this shouldn't. It's this, again, the Lulu. It shouldn't exist. It shouldn't be. But it does. And pretending that you're in the same, and for, we're now going to Pokemon labels and, you know, Pokemon collection, where they're like, you can only speak of this if you publicly have ostracized yourself, because that's what I'm seeing it at. by saying that you have or had this problem thing. But if you have suffered from borderline or bipolarity and you have overcome it, then you need to shut up. Then you don't get to speak anymore. But you only get to speak if you still have bipolar, right? You only get to speak if you still have triggers. If you've overcome them, then your voice don't count anymore because it doesn't fit the narrative.
Yeah. Well, what's
so everyone's cycling.
And the people, well, the people who have actually like overcome themselves, right? Who have actually, like, you know, like gone from like institutionalized to like just, you know, through a course, obviously a course of work, they've done this and they've overcome themselves. And now they don't have it anymore. They're not bothered with this anymore. It really does deconstruct a lot of the things that these people who lean on it do. It kind of sweeps the leg because it's like, you know, like I've heard of people who have actually been institutionalized and then just realized, you know what? I'm not doing this anymore. I can't live like this. Like, this is not a life, you know? And they got so frustrated with themselves that they just said, I'm just not going to indulge it. And it took a lot of work. It took a lot of new habits. It took a lot of, you know, kind of reevaluating the world, a lot of introspection, a lot of, you know, purging of stupid shit and baggage, but they did it. And then when they come back and say, you know what? I realized that it was a choice. There was a day where I woke up and said, no more. And no different than addiction, you hit rock bottom and you say, no more. And you just fucking say goodbye to that shit and you move on, right? Through a series of events. And I'm not saying it turns off like a switch. I'm saying it's a process, but nonetheless, it's possible. And I've heard people just, you know, defend the fuck out of it and just say, no, then you weren't really depressed. You weren't really bothered. You weren't really mentally ill. You faked it the entire time. And it's like, so I did all of this so that I could do this to you on social media? You think I went through all of that so that I could say, see, to you on social media? Like, no, I didn't. I didn't even know you existed.
Like, right.
You know, like, well, don't flatter
and
yourself.
And this is the, yeah, that. And this is what they use constantly. That's what we went full cycle now, where they say that, so this is the funny thing, right? And there's some message coming through. The funny thing is that most people don't really know what I've been through. Right. Like if you would ask random Facebook people or perhaps even second layer circle, most people couldn't tell you really, like, I don't know, you know, maybe some, you know, some violence evidently, but they couldn't tell you specifically. But everyone knows I've been through shit.
Right.
Right? Like there's a discernment. But the fact that we right now say like, oh, but the shit you've been through, like writing it off as, oh, but you had the secret gene to overcome this, therefore it's not your doing. It's, you know, it's the attribute to your willpower to live. Like we're cycling back now where my traumas, my overcoming, and I'm not calling them traumas. I'm calling them hardships.
Yeah, sure.
But, you know, they're your traumas, Bara. You've only overcome them because you're privileged, because you had, like, you have this characteristic that you overcome things, right? So now it has nothing to do with me. It's outside of me.
So you didn't even accomplish anything?
No. Yeah. No. And now it's while it's simultaneously being a privilege, because if I wouldn't be this resilient if I haven't had my hardships, which I also disagree with, by the way. I think people can be very resilient without going through hardships. And coming the usage of words where the person who is catcalled is in the same Me Too category as the girl who, you know, walked from a club and is violently raped by a stranger in an alley. Right. That's the same group. Like, right. The fucking dishonor and disservice.
Right.
Oh, I'm Me Too too.
Right. It's a
what happened to you? Oh, I was someone called at me, you and your nice tits, while I was in New York. So Me Too, hashtag Me Too. Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
Are you fucking kidding?
The opposite of stolen valor, right? So it's stolen victimhood or some sort, like, where it's like you're pretending and you're LARPing as if you were part of the same thing. And, you know, it serves us right as a society to make a currency out of victimhood. Like, we did that, you know, as a society, we culturally created this cultural currency and did that. And now you're getting it. And it's like, for me, I don't, like, I've seen a few things where, like, somebody had said, you know, you never know how, you know, you never know how painful words can be kind. And I said, you know, I'm not on the be kind train anymore. I'm really not. I was for a minute. I was there for a second and I visited and I hated it.
Right.
I left.
Went to the station, shopped around, looked around, got out.
And then I got the fuck off because.
Saw the dirty toilets.
Exactly. I said, here's what I'm going to do. I said, I'm going to be honest. I'm going to be principled. I'm going to be civil. I'm going to be those things. And if in the commissioning of those things, you don't like it, that's not a me problem. It's not my job to. Twofold, it's not my job to walk on eggshells around you and tread lightly for fear that I might tread on your feelings. And it's not your fucking job to police me as a grown-ass woman. Don't police my behavior. If you don't like it, walk away. No one's holding you in their basement. But don't police me. Don't infantilize me. And don't put yourself in a position where you have some sort of authority to check me on anything. You don't. If I didn't actually, like, commit a crime against you, you can fuck right off. You have the right to do that, and nobody is stopping you. So let's just keep it at that, you know? And it's like, but people are trying to police each other, and it's inappropriate. Like, I get it. You know, it'd be different if it was like Chris saying, hey, Kelly, you might have been a little hard on that person, right? Chris can say that. You could probably say that. Random person on the street? No. No, you may not. Not to a grown adult. Go check the fucking kids. Check those kids, because it's the kids who are fucking doing stupid shit. You don't like what I say? Don't listen. Walk away. Block me. Fucking keep scrolling. All sorts of other options, you know?
But they can, because they feel there are a direct, they literally feel victimized by the urge of the pull that feeling of your statement, that cost.
Yes.
Yes. That, and this is where the whole, like, emotional labor, what was it? What was my post last week? We talked about it, where everything was racism. Tipping culture was racism. I don't even know what it was. I was talking about something.
Tipping, racism.
And I'm like, I'm not going to educate you during black. Bitch, you came here. I didn't even know if you, like, I literally did not know you existed. What you mean? You're not going to educate me. First of all, I didn't assign you a teacher. Like, I didn't, this is the thing, right? These policing figures, first of all, I have to acknowledge you as a authority over me, towards me, in regards to me, in reflection to me, to give you the privilege of educating, policing me, correcting me. Like, that's why, like you said, my partner can do that. My inner circle can do that, because I gave them, I actively sought out their authority, and vice versa.
Right.
That's a kind of like a.
But I also value their input. Yeah. They're in my
exactly. Class, like, exactly. That's a actual transaction between our friendship, that I value your feedback, vice versa. And we all value integrity. Yeah. In order for it to be called out in others when the other might drop a ball on that or fail on their behalf due to whatever reason.
Right.
But no, you educate me, let me educate you, let me police you. Are you on crack? It's the drugs.
It's gotta be
the water.
It's a really bad batch. Like, actually, you got the swag.
they got the low end stuff. It's too mixed up, people.
That's right.
It's mixed up with
the product first. That's right. That's what you get. You know,
should have gotten the test kit.
That's right. Somebody. Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, I mean, it's interesting because I know that is something that's currently happening to a couple of people I know, where it's like their kid is actually policing them, the parent. And I'm just like,
is there an example? Is it like, oh, dad, you can't say that anymore because
it's so bad. Oh my god. Okay, so it's basically like,
I'm ready.
So you know how, I mean, you know, there's a thing that's going around where it's like everybody has their love language, right? You've heard of this, where it's like, you know, my love language is really good food, my love language is, you know, a touch or whatever. And I get that. Like, there's people who show their affection in certain ways, and there's people who like to receive affection in certain ways. I get that part. I just want to acknowledge that up front. But when you don't get that, right, and it's your kid, and your kid is saying, you need to behave this way with me, or else you don't really love me. That kind of ultimatum shit is just like it's so foreign to me. And I'm just like, on what fucking timeline? And in what?
I'm too immigrant for this.
I'm too fucking immigrant for this. I'm like,
no, you are. Literally. We're too immigrant for this. Japan and East Europe has entered the chat. We're too immigrant for this.
What the fuck is this? These are all words, but none of them make sense together. Like, you know? And I'm just like, and I'm trying to process it. And I'm just like.
But this is the thing. Your brain does not have the software.
No.
So, because it keeps going like, dick, duke, dick, duke,
It's all 404.
Right. Like, constantly. Okay, try again.
404. Yeah. And I'm just like, I'm just on that thing where I'm like, I can't download this. I don't know what this is. This is
it's like a PlayStation game on a Windows Vista, not compatible.
100%. And I'm just like, all I can do, right? My only response is, and it's so visceral. All I can say is, if my kids came at me with that, I would just be like, especially if they were adults, like if they were grown, right? And they're telling me this shit. Mm-hmm. I'd be like, you honestly don't get to tell me how to relate to you. You can tell me you don't like it. And you can obviously cut me off. And all of those things are viable options for you. But you don't get to tell me how to show you love or affection. If you don't like the way I show it, that's fine. That's your prerogative. And as an adult, ain't nobody keeping
me. And then as you mature to whatever capacity as a child of, it's your responsibility to share its potential or like the effects or how it makes you feel. And then that parent can take into consideration, oh, sure. Okay.
Right. And I think, and to some degree, that's fair. I think there's a certain amount, like it just depends on where it's coming from. If it's like,
absolutely.
You know, and I get it. Like my dad's humor was kind of harsh. So I get it. Like my older sister didn't like it and, you know, and it was upsetting to her. And, you know, for me, I was just like, meh. You know, sometimes he hits, sometimes he doesn't. Sometimes he lands the punchline and sometimes he fails. And I'm just like, meh, you know, it's whatever. That's dad. And I kind of wrote it off, you know, where she, but
you know, it wasn't malicious intent. It's not like your father would.
Yeah, it wasn't malicious, but it was, some of it was in bad taste. Like I was just like, it was just unnecessary and he'd said it anyway. And I'm just like, dad, you know, and I get it. So it's like, she'd say something and I'm just like, she's just, that's not her sense of humor. Like read the room, bro. You know, like, and there'd be some of that.
Sure.
But, sure. You know, and that was just like, I mean, if you really want to keep having a relationship with her, maybe don't do that. Or do it, you know, and then you can say that, you know, I couldn't shut the fuck up and just keep my jokes to myself or, you know, or understand that she doesn't get it and that's not her thing and do something. You know, like I said, you got to do something. You got to optimize a little bit here. And I said, look, you want to give me a bunch of shit. Give me a bunch of shit. I don't care. Like I'm fine with it. Like I take it and I'm good. And at some point, you know, I learned to give it back and he didn't like it so much. And you know, and I was just like, wait, you taught me this. This is your trait. You know, I'm like, this is your currency. This is how you related to me. And now I'm relating to you back. You don't get to do that. And he kind of just, you know, he got it. He got
because
it.
Because a good player will recognize.
Game versus game. You know, game recognizes game. Exactly. And when the student has become the master, you know, and it's like, but that was a way to check my parents, right? But when you're saying that it's like, ultimatums are not okay to me. I don't like that. I'm not very receptive to that at all. Like, I don't like anybody doing that to me and saying, if you loved me, you would do these things. But if I have to tell you, and it's not in your nature to do it, then the odds are this is not going to go over well, you know? And it's like, I understand a child wanting a certain relationship, but when you realize that that's not possible, like it's just not realistic, you know? Asking for like, you know, like saying you shouldn't have gotten a divorce. It's kind of like, well, that's not in the cards, right? Like, It's already happening. Oh, so it's like.
But this is where you're touching on a great point where it's like the child's perspective is operating from the notion your existence should evolve fully around me and my good feeling.
Yeah.
Not my well-being, because a child doesn't have a perspective. Like, it doesn't matter. Even if you're, until you're perhaps 18, living on your own, or any of those contexts, you do not have the context of well-being.
No, fair enough.
You only have your feelings.
That's right.
Right? So you shouldn't have divorced because it hurt me. Right? Yeah. Or you should do this because you love me. It's all insinuating this very centristic, like, hey, I am the center of the universe.
No bullshit. Yes. Yeah. Definitely.
And then real life teaches you that main character energy comes from inward and goes out, right? It's an active participation in life, and then others get sucked into your main characterism.
Right. Right.
But it's not a demand. It cannot be demanded.
That's right. And I see it though, and it's like, okay, so for me, it's like the audacity, first of all.
One.
Second, the disrespect, right? I'm just like, wow, that's just a lot. That's just a lot. That's a lot for me to process. But, you put a lot on my system. You know, you just did. You just put a lot in there. And it's like, the third thing is, it's like you created a problem for yourself, right? When you decided to perceive me as malicious rather than just misaligned, perhaps, right? Like maybe we don't value the same things the same way. And that's fine. That to me is not offensive. And, you know, and it is what it is. Like, that kind of shakes out, you know? There's some kids just have different personalities than their parents. Like, sure. And it's like, we really just don't, we're not very compatible, or we have different values, right? Okay, sure. We're not very compatible. We're not going to see each other that much. Okay, you know, I mean, bonne chance, like, whatever, you know?
perhaps even good, right? Like, that means that you create its own person that can, like, if it's actual value thing, its own thinking person.
Yeah, and for me, as a parent, I'm super proud of that. Like, I'm just like, that you're so independent, right? That you don't rely on me to affirm everything you're doing, but rather you struck out and did your own thing. Even if you end up finding out later that you're wrong, it doesn't matter. You did this and you're going to do it and you're going to go. And I'm like, you know, more power to you. Fucking live your best life, you know, and do the thing. To me, even if I'm not part of that, I've already set the wheels in motion. I did my part to get you to do that. You know, there's something about our relationship that prompted you to say, you're not for me. This is not for me. I'm going to go seek what is for me elsewhere. Okay. And that's okay. That to me is not an ultimatum. That to me is a declarative statement. That's a plan. That's a,
absolutely.
Right? You tell me that I need to relate to you a certain way and I'm sick and tired of your shit. Da, 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 and it's like, don't lecture
or
me.
Or else.
Yeah. Don't lecture me. Don't lecture me. That's not your place. It really isn't. You know, I don't lecture my parents. I never lectured my parents. I simply told them, look, this is not for me. You know, there's just some shit I don't like and this is it. You know, and if that's a problem for you, then that's a problem for you. Okay, you'll sort that out.
This is not working for me, or this won't work for me.
Yeah, this is not working.
This is my assessment of why it's not working, right?
Like, yeah, and it was a very simple conversation, but you know, but if my kids started telling me like how I need to behave and started lecturing me on me and my life choices, I'd be like, no, I'm not taking advice from somebody who's yet to get their shit together, you know, and get some fucking life under their belt to tell me about the life I've been living for 47 years, right?
Right.
You are part of my life, but you're not the center of it. You are part of it. You actually aren't the main character of my life. I'm the main character of my life, and you are but a guest star. You know, like, and I'm the guest star in your life, though. So I don't need you to build your life around me either.
The difference is that I as the guest star, as your parent, you are dependent on me.
Right.
And the thing is that, you know, a lot of these, you know, children parental conversations and debates, what they miss is discernment.
Yes.
And I do feel that, you know, our generation, our parents' generation, you know, it would oversimplify And it would imply a righteous authority, right? Because I am the parent. Therefore, because I have the discernment, I have a life of that gives me the discernment. You don't have that as a child. And it, you know, it got simplified in because I said so, which is fine. Mm-hmm. Like we can discuss whether that's the right approach or not.
Yeah.
But you know, as you grow older, and endless examples ad nauseum, I'll never take grammar insults from anyone who speaks less than 9 languages.
Right. Now, before we end the episode, I am confident that you wouldn't just leave without hitting like, without hitting subscribe, without hitting that share button, right? You want to do that to me. I'm up in here connecting with people, wanting you to be a part of the conversation, and you would almost leave? Come on. Don't be like that.
Like it's just not going to happen. You singular linguist inferior person. Like you're not in the position, right?
Right.
And the same, you don't get to lecture me on life if you're not in my tax bracket or if you're morbidly obese. It's just it's just not happening. And it's the same with a child. Like unless you have done XYZ.
Yeah.
And I've had this with one of my exes, like, and this is many years ago, that his younger brother who lived still with the parents, he had all this like, you know, he had the wise theory because he would read Think and Grow Rich or whatever the fuck kind of books, right?
Oh, okay.
I'm like, why it's all cute? You don't have, like, you lack of discernment because you haven't lived the life. You're just regurgitating theory.
You have knowledge and no wisdom, right?
You have ideas. Yeah. You have words.
You have data. You've read a lot of data. You've taken in a lot of data and you haven't processed any of it yet. So,
exactly. And it's the same with kids, right? When they get all these ideas like, hey, your life should evolve around me. You have a bunch of ideas. But that's about it.
You know, tangential to that, because I just heard it Dr. Phil was on Rogan. I don't know if you saw it.
Oh my God. Everybody drop your life. It was such a good episode. And I can't wait for his new book. I cannot wait for his new book.
Thank you. I'm like, okay. So I just watched it.
Yes,
and I'm like, so, but his thing was, is that younger people are so busy watching other people live their lives. And they're fake lives, right? They're not real lives. They're not doing real shit. They're like posing and then going back to their couch. Like they're not doing anything. So it's like, and he's like, they're so busy watching other people live their lives. They're not busy living their own lives, right? And you start to create this sort of envy where it's like the grass is always greener on the other side, but that's largely because you've neglected your own lawn. Like you're not watering your own shit and it's dying from neglect. Like, you're literally like the depraved indifference of your own life. It needs to be addressed, you know? And I'm just, and that was what, you know, when he said that, I was just like, that's exactly it. People are so consumed watching other people live that they start to feel this sort of deficiency or inferiority of themselves. And they're, what they do is they say, oh, you're privileged. Or, and they start to make excuses for the discrepancy that they perceive. Nobody else put it there. You did. You fucking created that out of thin fucking air. You know, you said, I'm going to go on Instagram today, watch somebody live their best life, and then proceed to criticize why that is true. First of all, you don't even know that that's real. You could have just been deep faked the fuck out. That person probably went home. Like, come on.
Like, well, even let's see if it's real, right? Yeah. And then we could go into what we value.
Yeah.
Right? Because there's like the jet set life. Yeah. Sure. What's happening out, like what's happening in order to get the jet set life, right? That's the 16 hours work day.
That's right.
And I'm all for that jet set. Like I love rich lifestyles you get into the, like using millionaire fast lane terminology, you're either a consumer or a producer. Yeah. The producers are not, they're not consumed ironically with what other people's produce. They're just producing.
That's right. Yeah.
Consumers, on the other hand, are constantly watching the producers and then be like, oh, but why don't I have that too?
Right. Right. And you see a lot of it, but I think social media has gotten it to a far more like fever pitch, you know, in that it's gotten very extreme and it's gotten particularly extreme with younger people. Like they've just become, you know, obsessed with other people's lives and what they don't have, but they're not working toward that either. They have built no plan for that. So they're not saying, you know, it'd be different. If I saw somebody online and I'm like, you know what? I like that. I kind of want, I'm going to try that, you know, or I want to do something like that.
Well,
you know?
But it's the thing. This is producer mindset.
Right.
And all of us producers, literally pull inspiration out of other producers. Like if for the 10 minutes I am online and I see, you know, one coach made 20 mil a year and I see the things she pulled out for that, I'm like, damn, okay, let me get a gear up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let me see what my gear up means. What could that do?
Yeah, exactly.
Because I see it, oh my God, someone else, because in my own industry, and we've talked about that previously, in my own industry, because I was such an early adapter in that industry, I had to figure out the wheel so many fucking times. Like there was no one to tell me, show me, or right, from payment processors to, you know, to
All the things.
I was the first one. So when I see someone doing great, I'm like, oh my, it's such an expanding thing for me because I mean, oh my God, that means I don't have to invent the wheel myself. There's some blueprint.
Yeah.
Maybe like I might have to adapt it a bit, but oh my God, there's a blue, like someone did it.
But that's, But like, that's the difference. Like that's what I was explaining actually in my job. Cause I'm in advertising. I was explaining to somebody the difference between the intentions behind people who go to Instagram versus people who go to Pinterest. And people who go to Pinterest want to do it. They do. They don't just want to see somebody's outcome. They want it. They do. They want to see that it's successful. But
like
they
there's aesthetic pleasing.
Yeah. They like to see that, but they want to emulate it. They want to go do it themselves. That is the difference. That is the critical difference between the intentions between people who go to Pinterest and people who go to Instagram. People who go to Instagram want to see other people do things, and then they stop there. But people who go to Pinterest tend to want to do what they're doing. And because somebody showed them it's possible, you know, so they might not have come up with the idea themselves, but they are proactive enough to say, I want to learn how to do it. And maybe if I'm good enough, I can adapt it for myself and do other things. That's a thing, you know? And so, I've heard a lot of people like almost rebuke Pinterest as a viable place to advertise because they're like, a lot of people don't use it. And I'm like, yeah, but the people who do are high quality.
Right. Word.
Like the composition of that audience is high quality, high conversion rate, high propensity to act, like because they came with that intention before they ever showed up on the platform. I said, that is not true of any other platform, not even TikTok.
That's so interesting. Mm. I hadn't you're putting it on the nail because I wasn't on Pinterest until I started decorating my new house. There was no reason for me to be there.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, let me collect all these ideas and see if I can make a mishmash out of it myself, which is in the doing right now. Yep. Same for my chicken coop. I'm going to collect chicken coop ideas.
Yes.
And now me and Mike, the husband, are making, drawing plans.
Yeah. You see?
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's real.
My God, that's such an excellent point.
Yeah. And it's like, so I said, you have to ignore the numbers and start looking at like the soft metrics and the soft studies. And there are, I have countless studies on it. But that's the point, right? Is it's like, you can tell the mentality difference. Are you an Instagram person or are you a Pinterest person? Because the Pinterest person is ready to go. Like they're ready to shop. Yeah. They'll shop right there. They'll be like, oh, I just need to get these five things and I can make butterflies out of dollar bills. That's awesome. And then they just, you know,
let's go.
And they go and they're like, I'm going to go to the bank right now and make change. And it's like, they'll do it. Like they will do it right there. They'll drop their shit and go do it. Like it's that immediate and it's that urgent for them. And they'll save it and they'll go back to it. And they do, they're loyal about it. I am everything on my Pinterest. I have it all organized and shit.
Me too.
And it's like anybody who asks me about anything, my daughter will text me and ask me for shit. And I'm just like, let me go consult my Pinterest because I know I got something in there for that.
Right.
Like, sure. Shit. There it is. Shared.
See, this is the producer mindset though. Because I have, so even on my Pinterest aside, I have filming room, which is my current project, right? Mm-hmm. Then I have chicken coop life.
Yeah.
Then I have mailbox life because I'm making a mailbox, myself. And then I also have a to make board and I have a to try board. The to make is easy. So whether it's food, whether it's a film, whether it's whatever, the to try is like, oh, I'm not really sure what the fuck I'm doing, but I'm going to try it.
Yes.
But I specifically call that one to try.
Yeah.
No expectations. Yep. I'm just trying.
Yep. Yep. No, that is. And I think I think you're right. It does come down to that mentality. And as much as I don't want to use, you know, tropey terms, it's true. There is a different mindset of people and you can tell how they go about the world and based on what their values are and where and what they're concerned about. You know, if you're concerned about getting, you know, getting the resources and you're concerned about curating your plan, that's a completely different mindset from a person who has no plan and is not very resourceful and is more concerned about how you're executing your plan. Then, you know, you've got a huge, and I think when people get out of that mindset though, when they snap out of it, because I don't think it's incurable. I really do. I do think that.
Oh, absolutely. It's a skill. It's a skill.
It is.
So some are more talented naturally and inclined naturally to it, but definitely still a skill.
Yeah. And I think it's learnable and I think it's coachable and I think it's, you know, and it's about, you know, and it's about challenging yourself to things that rather than expecting to get just a home run, you know, it's about just taking the base hit, right? It's like four base hits right. is the same. Like if you get the same yeah. score as a home run, you might as well just take the base hit. It's like, yeah. and I think people aren't patient enough for that because they're so used to seeing the finished product. They're so used to seeing Harrison Ford as a successful actor. They don't want to look at Harrison Ford living out of his car as a carpenter, you know?
Like, right. And then, and touching on the discernment in that is people love like listening to successful people, what they're doing now, but I'm like, I want to know what you did to get there.
Yeah.
I'm not interested. I can't care less what you're doing right now.
Yeah, good for you. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But
I'm not in that position. Yeah. How'd you get there?
Right. Yeah. There was a method. There was a method to the madness.
So give me the method. I'm going to try the method myself.
Yeah.
Give it to me.
Yeah. And maybe, you know, and if it was just luck, fine. It was just luck. Then we'll figure that out as I go. But there's something sure. that you did. You woke up every day.
And like the triple Capricorn means like, okay, you say it's just luck. Okay. Okay. So what do I do to make that luck happen?
How do I conquer the luck then? Like,
right. Like, what do I do?
Yeah.
Like there's something to be lucky. Like how do I do the lucky?
Yeah, how do I do the lucky?
How do I do the lucky?
I saw your reel about the homestead money. That was the best. That blessed
me. Yeah, it's really good. I have so many much coming. Yesterday we found about like 60 guinea hen eggs.
Oh.
Have you ever had guinea hen eggs?
No.
So they're like half the size. Oh, wait, I can show you.
Are they like quail eggs?
A little bit bigger. Well, let me show you. I have some here. Wait, do you want it? Okay. For the listeners, I just disappeared from the camera. So this is a chicken egg. This is a
okay.
Unbreakable, like a golf ball. I won't do it here. I made a video on Instagram. Like I can a chicken egg, you can just squeeze and it'll crack. Even my 300-pound muscle husband can't crack these. But I like the flavor of them more than the normal chicken eggs.
Oh, okay.
So I found 60 eggs, and I had to test them, you know, float them to see if they're still good, and they're all good, 100 out of 100.
Yeah.
So I'm like,
how do you open them though?
So like with a knife or against like a real hard stone surface.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
Dookie, stop eating the feather, weirdo. Okay.
Okay.
Are we going to close it up for this week?
Yeah, I think we solved all that.
We solved the life, everyone. Diamonds and demons here at Fearless Wealth. We'll see you next week. Keep binge watching. Keep hearing the commentators. We're superior. Let's go.